It's Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
Among the beach dirty wannabes of South Beach walked a serial killer, police said, who murdered Gianni Versace in the front steps of his Mediterranean mansion.
Mr. Versace, of course, one of the world's top fashion designers, whose designs are famous in all the big fashion centers such as Paris, Rome, and London.
This was a single white male who approached Mr. Versace as he was about to enter the gates.
Andrew Cunanan is now a target himself. Who is he?
Hi, welcome to Still Watching, a new podcast from Vanity Fair. I'm senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair film and television critic Richard Lawson.
We just wanted to put up this brief episode before the holidays arrive to announce this new project that we're working on. This new show will be looking at the FX series, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, American Crime Story. This is sort of the continuation of The People versus OJ, which came out in 2015. And this is a new crime, a new case, a new moment in history. There will be 9 episodes that start in January of 2018. But we wanted to get out here quickly to let you know this is coming, let you know why we're really excited about this show, and, you know, get you excited to break down the episodes with us week by week on this show. Richard, when you first heard about this FX series, or what were some of your first thoughts about it?
I would say cautious excitement, a little trepidation. I get a little nervous anytime a sort of like major piece of, you know, gay pop history or whatever gets fictionalized, because it's not always handled well or cast well. But as this thing took shape and Ricky Martin joined the cast and Penelope Cruz joined the cast, and very intriguingly, Darren Criss, you know, was hired to play Andrew Cunanan, like, I got more and more interested. So I think that there's a really nice intersection of you know, things that we at VF like to write and talk about on our podcast, that the show, it feels like a good fit for the launch of what could be, you know, a broader podcast going forward.
Right. So, you know, this to me feels like one of the most VF Vanity Fair shows I could possibly ever think of. There are a couple things connecting it. Like, first of all, Andrew Cunanan himself, the man who, this is not a mystery show. The show starts with the assassination. So this is the man who shot Gianni Versace. There's no mystery box here. Andrew Cunanan was himself obsessed with the figure of Condé Nast, you know, so that's one Vanity Fair connection. Also, the first episode opens with Gianni Versace going to the newsstands and buying a copy of Vanity Fair. So, like, the show does not shy away from sort of some of the Vanity Fair and Condé Nast connections. But we should also mention, of course, that Vanity Fair contributing writer Maureen Orth wrote sort of the definitive book of this assassination that was used as the foundation for this show. I, you know, as with People versus OJ, I think there's a lot of other materials that have come in to sort of support and enhance a lot of the reporting that Maureen did. You know, there's been more information or changing societal sort of views since that book was published. But, you know, Maureen's perspective and her connection to Vanity Fair is part of the narrative of the show. So we were hoping that we might be able to offer some extra insight to the series itself. And I'm also curious, Richard, what you think. You know, one of the things that made The People versus OJ such an interesting lightning rod when it came out in 2015 was the way in which it used recent history to explore, you know, what was currently going on in the culture. And I know that Ryan Murphy, who's the showrunner, you know, showrunner, executive producer in both series, he has his ideas about why the assassination of Gianni Versace is such an important story to explore now. But do you have any thoughts on why this particular story might be good to examine right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that something that People versus OJ did so brilliantly was, like you said, it sort of synthesized recent history with a lot of, you know, frankly, the racial politics of today, and really addressed both, you know, kind of reassessed the past while looking at the present and the future in a really sharp and just unendingly entertaining way. And I think that the access points for the Versace story are a little bit harder to sort of suss out. But I think that this is the way that the media reacted to this story, and the way that I, as a teenager who was about a year and change, 2 years away from coming out myself, like the way that the gay angle of the story sort of was crafted and that we can now reassess, I think that there's a lot that we can look at today that bears a similarity to that. So I'm really curious to see as the show goes on how that's kind of sussed out and what kind of what they choose to focus on in particular. So I think that the map is a little bit less clear than it was for OJ maybe, but you know, based on that show's success, I'm again cautiously optimistic that this will deliver.
Well, you know, we should point out that People vs. OJ had Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski. I might have butchered that. I apologize. But these were sort of the writers and also producers behind that series. They are not on this series. On this series, though, it is Tom Rob Smith, who wrote the great novel Child 44 and also worked on the TV series London Spy, is sort of the driving writing force behind this. So it does have a different flavor, even though it's sort of branded as in the same series as People versus OJ. You know, and we should also, right off the top, sort of for people who are listening and don't know, talk about what exactly happened to Johnny Versace, which will be covered in the very first episode of the FX series, but that he was shot outside of his home in Miami Beach in 1997, that Andrew Cunanan was someone who knew Johnny Versace, that he was, you know, is actually a serial killer. It's not a one-off. He's a serial killer. There's a lot of meeting points between fashion and, as Richard mentioned, sort of gay culture and celebrity and tabloid journalism, which was sort of on the rise. Are there any other details of this particular crime, Richard, that you find particularly compelling?
Well, I think it's kind of still a question, right, whether or not they really knew each other. You know, I think or how well they knew each other, right? Like, is that been? I don't think that's decided fact. Is that right?
Okay, so this show is an exploration of, like, what if, or maybe they did.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, and you and I both are going to be ourselves diving more into this and, you know, reading other literature while also watching the show. So we'll become more informed about this as you guys do. You know, that's why, you know, we're watching this, you know, with you, and we're not, you know, we're not coming in with everything sort of preloaded, let's say.
Right. If you're rolling your eyes right now, what I just said, let me assure you that over the holiday break, I will be reading Maureen North's book, Vulgar Favors.
As well, in Miami.
Colon, Andrew Cunanan and Johnny Versace and the Largest Failed Manhunt in U.S. History. So that could be some holiday reading for you guys, too, if you want to take a deep dive on it. But we will come back in the new year with a little bit more information than I have right now. I'm just compelled, enormously compelled by the footage that I've seen. Richard and I have both seen the first episode, and I saw some added footage when I was at the Television Critics Association summer tour in August, and I just think it is lush and amazing in the way that you would expect a sort of Ryan Murphy full-blown FX series to be. The cast, which includes Penelope Cruz, Edgar Ramirez, Ricky Martin, Darren Criss, Judith Light, Max Greenfield, Finn Wittrock, like a number of Ryan Murphy favorites, as well as some, you know, genuine movie stars glamming up the place. I think it's going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, and you know, something that VF has covered for years and covers well is this intersection of wealth and crime and society, and so, you know, so this feels like something that we can hopefully treat right, you know, and give the right treatment to. We're hoping to have various guests. You know, we can't really announce anything yet, because mostly because we haven't confirmed anything yet, but like, we will, and it's going to be good. And I hope you guys will stick with us, because otherwise we're just talking to each other, and which we could do over Gene Chat and not bother with the studio.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you, Richard, is you know, something that I've been thinking about a lot, especially with the release of The Crown on Netflix, which is another TV series that is very Vanity Fair and we have covered extensively on our website. But it's one of those shows that, you know, as with any Netflix series, comes out all at once. And so it comes out all at once. People are watching it at different paces. The discussion is really hard to sort of get a hold on around that show because it drops all at once and you never know when your friend or neighbor or a random person online, what episode they're on and what they're talking about. And so something that I love about an FX show is that we can digest it week by week and we can get engrossed and drawn to the story. I was fascinated by what happened around OJ because when I had just the wrong measure of that show, when I watched the screeners the first time, when it came out, before it came out, I was like, I don't know that anyone's going to like the show. Like, I read it completely wrong. And everyone was just completely obsessed and fascinated. And it got a pile of awards and all of that sort of stuff. I genuinely don't know what's going to happen with Versace, but I am excited by the potential for a week in, week out discussion of the series and about the echoes and the performances and all of that sort of thing. Do you have any opinions on binge television or the streaming process of releasing all at once and what that's doing to TV criticism and the discussion around it in general?
Well, I remember last spring when HBO was airing Big Little Lies, which was, mm-hmm. at least in my corner of the world, a huge phenomenon. But I think in general it was. It's won a ton of awards. It was a big ratings hit. They're unfortunately doing a second season. And I, you know, while I watching that kind of phenomenon unfold, I said, I wonder if Netflix is looking at this and being like, there might be something to this releasing, you know, week after week and not jumping everything at once because of the way the conversation built. And I think that in a way is sort of how TV is designed and meant to be consumed. And I think that that's how the conversation is kind of supposed to go. And, you know, maybe I'm just being a sort of stodgy traditionalist Luddite kind of person about it, but like I think it's a much more enjoyable way to watch a show with other people, which is essentially what we're doing. You know, we might be home alone, but like we like to talk about it, we like to read the recaps, we like to do this. And I think that the traditional format, you know, the release format, just gives everything a little more shape, and I think it makes it more exciting rather than, you know, just binging through a whole episode of Stranger Things and not knowing who else has seen it and being very cautious about what you can talk about. You know, so I think that, yeah, you're right that FX is a smart, I mean, they're a broadcast network, so they have to, or cable network, so they have to kind of do this anyway. But I'm glad that there are still networks doing it.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray. We're culture writers, podcasters, and hosts of the show Love to See It.
Every week, we give an unapologetically feminist dissection of reality dating shows, rom-coms, and other romance narratives. We unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
And we dive into all the details with special guests like actors, authors, and cultural critics.
You can find Love to See It wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop every Tuesday.
I also feel like it gives a stickiness to a show. You know, that's a marketing term, but just it helps a show endure. Like, you know, The Big Little Lies is a perfect example of it. Bringing it up is like the way in which we chewed that over week by week. And even if people who hadn't started at the beginning, they rushed to catch up. So they too were going week by week with everyone. The same is true of like the HBO shows, like other HBO shows like Game of Thrones or Westworld. Like, this becomes an enduring conversation and it's not something that you just sort of crazily crammed into your face over the course of a weekend so that you could not be spoiled by anything. And you got it all in. No one can possibly spoil what history tells us about Princess Margaret or whatever. You got it all in. But yeah, it's a very, like, I think, lonely way in which to consume culture, or it can be. And I like the, not just because it's something that I do a lot, but I like the cottage industry that springs up around a good serialized week by week TV show, whether it is a recap or a podcast discussing it.
Yeah.
And then it helps me understand the show better, you know, and I hope you guys will do this. I hope you guys will reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at Joe Wrote This, Richard's at Rylaws. You know, to hear your thoughts on the show and help that inform how I process when I'm watching. I think that's just a really, really vital thing that we have that's enhanced by the internet and that we can still have before we're only ever watching Netflix and it's only ever bingeable stuff that we watch all on our own.
One of the few things that's positively enhanced by the internet, let's say, you know.
Right.
But no, exactly. I think that, like, what... we in general are, I think, struggling for a sense of you know, communion and in life. And I think that, you know, just having everything be your own experience with a you know, a Netflix show or an Amazon show where everything's available, and you kind of just hermetically seal yourself and just watch feverishly this whole thing, and then kind of, you know, come up for air at the end and say, who else did that? You know, I like that we're able to kind of sit with something together and talk about it. And, you know, I've never had a more sort of thorough experience with that than I did with, like, Lost, which, you know, was on for 6-7 seasons. And you know, I would have viewing parties and go to other people's houses every week for years. And, you know, it kind of did me dirty in the end, that show. But, but, you know, the experience was so fun, and I've kind of longed for it. And I think that, it exists very much in the gay community with Drag Race, which I don't watch for whatever reason. And you know, so I'm just excited, you know, in a virtual sense, at least, to have this kind of weekly check-in about a show that hopefully we're all kind of obsessing over.
Richard, I'm definitely not going to sit here and make you speak for the entire gay community, but I am, like, curious what you think about any potential backlash or controversy over Andrew Cunanan, who is a polarizing figure, like, portraying a gay character as a serial killer, as a serial liar, as a, you know, all of this. Is this, you know, Ryan Murphy has a history of course, he is a gay man himself, like a lot of gay positive TV series, but, like, are you anticipating, are you worried about, are you pre-engaging in any sort of resistance to this story being told at all?
Well, I mean, I should say that I was, you know, in a free and fair election, elected to be a representative of the entire gay community. So you don't need to apologize about that.
Yeah, congratulations for your victory.
I'm wearing a sash and everything.
It was a landslide.
Yeah. I was watching the first episode, and I was texting you about it, and I said, oh, I hope you're ready for me to have a lot of, like, gay opinions about this, because, yeah, it is pretty fraught, you know. I think that, you know, from Talladega Nissa Ripley and, you know, Scar in The Lion King, I mean, there are a lot of gay villains. It used to be a sort of just a trope where a villain in a movie, before you could, you know, they weren't saying he was gay, was sort of coded as that. That's a concern in a way, but also this is a true story that happened. And, you know, from what I've seen and what I've read about this, about the case, and we'll read further about it, I think, and you know, is that that is an aspect of it. And I think it's also the queerness of it is really actually germane to the particular case. It informs it. It's a part of it. And I think that, you know, visibility matters, and obviously positive representation matters. But, you know, what is positive representation without negative representation? Without, you know, a sort of a full shading of what gay people are, because there are some villains and there's some heroes and there's everyone in between. And so I don't have any reservations about it yet. And I trust in a way that, you know, I don't often say, I trust Ryan Murphy to thread that tricky, you know, needle well on this, but we'll see. You know, I'm open to not liking it. I'm open to thinking it's, you know, a good thing. I have some reservations that we'll get into in further episodes about the casting, but yeah, for right now, I think it's fine. I don't think that we should be at all, you know, clutching pearls or whatever about this story existing at all on television, because, you know, it's something that really happened and it's interesting. So,
you know, to that point, talking about representation across the spectrum, like, if we're going to use the O.J. Simpson parallel, it's like that show and that actual fact of history is not just about one black man who probably definitely killed some people, but there's a whole bunch of other characters in that show and in real life offering different experiences of, like, you know, different angles on the black experience in America, right? You've got Sterling K. Brown's character, the Johnny Cochran character, and all of that sort of stuff. And so in what we've seen of the assassination of Johnny Versace so far, it's not, obviously, it's not just Andrew Cunanan is the one gay character. You've got Johnny Versace, you've got his longtime partner, you've got a lot of stuff going on. And so that's exactly, I think, right, is that as long as you have multiple angles, it's not doing the community a disservice to have a villainous gay character as long as you have multiple gay characters in this story, you know, generally. So, I mean, I'm really excited, but I am interested to hear a lot of perspectives. Like Richard said, we're hoping to talk to a bunch of different people. I'm interested to hear what everyone thinks about this show. And I'm excited for our reading assignment over the holiday break. Is there anything else that you want to talk about, Richard, before we head out?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that I guess I would. I'm saying this as much to myself as I am to hopefully who's listening. Is that, like, you know, I, like many others, I have my issues with Ryan Murphy shows. I have, you know, some reservations about various things. But I think it could be a fun experiment to just try to go into this as open minded as possible and see what it's all about. And then we can kind of come to some conclusions then. I'm trying not to you know, front load any you know, assessments of anything. And hopefully other people will do the same.
Right. So if you want to join us on this journey, whether it's just watching the show or doing the reading with us, you could pick up, if you want to, Vulgar Favors, Andrew Cannan and Gianni Versace and the Largest Failed Manhunt in U.S. History. It is available online and at bookstores. I have seen it on shelves. And otherwise, we will be back at you in January with a couple episodes leading up to the premiere at the end of the month. In the meantime, Richard, where can people find you?
At Rylaws, R-I-L-A-W-S on Twitter, and, you know, a bunch of things written on the website.
I'm Joanna Robinson. You can also find my stuff on VanityFair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, and we will see you in Miami in the new year. Still Watching Versace is a Vanity Fair podcast engineered by Danielle Roth and edited and produced by Dave Gonzalez.
Want to stay up to date on the biggest stories in pop culture and entertainment? Then be sure to check out the TMZ podcast. I'm Charlie Cotton from TMZ, the TV show, and every day I'll sit down with a member of our news team to give exclusive breakdowns of the day's most talked about headlines, stories we break, and the stories you care about. So check out the TMZ podcast, Monday through Friday, and the other podcasts from the TMZ audio network like Last Days and TMZ Verified, available on all podcast platforms.